Welcome back to the Historic Performance Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. As you know, I try to make my podcast as international as possible. I bring in guests from North America, Europe, and Oceania. The person joining us today is from the United States. He works with the Sporting KC Academy in Major League Soccer. That person is Josh McAllister. Josh, how are you?
I'm doing really good, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing just splendid today. I'm really excited about this podcast, really excited about what we're going to be talking about, specifically about the Sporting KC Academy and your work there. So just to get us started, Josh, can you give us a little bit of background information about yourself and how you ended up at Sporting KC?
Yeah, no problem. Just give a little background on myself. Born and raised in Iowa. So growing up in Iowa, I had a family that was very, workout oriented. So growing up in the, in the gym, working out with my dad, reading the old Flex magazines, all the old bodybuilding stuff is kind of how I got the bug for, weightlifting to start when I was really young. And then kind of going from there, always been into soccer, always played soccer, obviously club, high school, played a little bit in college. After a couple of years of playing in college at some smaller universities, I realized that I wasn't exactly going to be a pro, or I wasn't even anywhere near it, to be completely honest with you. So in my thoughts, it was just, all right, it's time to kind of hang up the boots on the playing side of things and then go straight into the educational piece. So I transferred to a university that had more of a focus in exercise science and physiology. So I graduated from the University of Northern Iowa with that degree. And while going to school there, I started my just soccer coaching, nothing to do with sports performance or training or anything like that. I just started on the coaching side of things about age 19. So I was fortunate enough to start at a pretty early age. Started doing my USSF licenses, did everything all the way up to my B license by the age of 24. So I had I felt like I got a good coaching foundation underneath me on the soccer side. And then while coaching, started to dabble a little bit in the fitness side of things, just because it's always been something I've enjoyed, obviously, just talking about how I grew up. And then started doing more and more, doing some personal training on the side at a gym, training soccer players in addition to coaching them. And then I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to serve an internship with the Portland Timbers probably around 3-4 years ago now. Served a year internship out there under their head fitness coach, Dr. John Cohn. It was a really, really, really beneficial experience just from being around the professional side of things. While out there, I worked with their academy. So I was fortunate to kind of cut my teeth with their academy, trying different things, learning how to, work with players on a day-to-day basis. Then after that, I've spent 3 seasons in Division I men's soccer at Drake University as an assistant coach, but kind of focusing more or less on the physical side of things, just all the preparation in regards to warm-ups, nutrition, recovery, everything, just trying to make sure the players can perform at their peak physical level, I guess you'd say. After serving some time at Drake University, I then got the opportunity just about a year ago now, last January, with Sporting Kansas City. And ever since, I've been with Sporting for the last, 11 months. And it's gone extremely fast, but it's been absolutely amazing. So I guess that brings me to where I am today. Other academies are, but I'm assuming we're very similar to a lot of academies where we have a U18, a U16, a U14, a U13, and a U12 team within our academy. And these players, train anywhere between 3 to 5 days a week at our training facility, play in the United States developmental academy. So we're playing against other MLS academies, plus we're also playing against just other developmental academies that aren't attached to MLS sides. So these are players that I guess you'd say, are very talented, obviously, but also have another level of commitment because they've kind of chosen soccer as their path and they aren't playing any other sports in high school. And obviously they're traveling more often than a regular club team would. So these are talented players, but also very committed players.
How does it work in terms of schooling? Do they attend their local high school and then they practice during certain specific times?
Yeah, pretty much all the boys just attend a regular high school. Probably the high school they would attend it even if they didn't play in the academy. And then we have training after school. So, you know, we have like a training session at 4 o'clock and then we have a few training sessions kind of going after that. So the players all live their regular life, go to school every day and then they come to training. But obviously we train depending on the week, obviously in the game schedule, we train most nights of the week.
Josh, I definitely want to come back to the Sporting KC Academy later on in the podcast, specifically talking about how you interact with parents, how you talk to them about strength and conditioning and get them to buy into the process, and also how do you talk to young kids about nutrition. But for right now, I want to talk about your role at Sporting KC. I know you have a little bit of a dual role in that you're an assist the first team performance coach, but you're also the academy strength and conditioning coach. So how does that dual role work for you? And what are your responsibilities in each realm?
Yeah, well, at Drake, I was an assistant coach to the actual head coach. So at Drake, I actually helped out with some of the training sessions, running, you know, drills and whatnot. With Sporting, I assist the head fitness coach. So in my role at Sporting, my priority is always going to be the academy. You know, if no matter what, the academy responsibilities will always be number one, and I'm going to make sure I do those to the best of my ability and that I'm there at every single session game that I can be at. In regards to assisting my boss with the first team, that is really kind of a situation where I help out when I can, you know, when there's no conflict in schedules and whatnot, just to make sure that obviously the academy is still my priority. So when assisting with the first team, you know, obviously you do some of the stuff where you're just helping, you know, set up gym and set out gear and help with some of the actual just organizational side of it so other people can focus on other things. But then there's also things where there's multiple things going on at a training session and I might have to take a cool down here or warm up there or take a gym session here. So it's really my role with helping my boss with the first team is mainly just, you know, can I make his life a little bit easier by, you know, doing a few things around first team training. Within the academy, my focus is every single day planning, preparing, getting organized, you know, getting, you know, we have five teams, so making sure all five teams are set up ready to go for the evening. I've been fortunate enough in the last few months to have an assistant, so that's helped out quite a bit because having five teams can obviously be a bit of a stretch trying to get to everything and make sure everything's done how you want it. But having an assistant come in has been really beneficial in regards to the responsibility because I can share it a little bit more now. But yeah, the academy is the priority, and I want to make sure that's done to the best of my ability. But the first team stuff that I can help out with every now and then is really almost just an added bonus on the side just to be able to help in any way.
I know many Major League Soccer clubs now have a reserve team. So like, for example, like a Red Bulls 2. Does Sporting KC have that?
That is, I think in the last couple months, that has officially been announced that Sporting Kansas City is going to have a team in the USL called the Swope Park Rangers, which kind of plays on the old nickname the fans gave the old Sporting Kansas City reserve team. So that should be kickstarting, you know, come the end of January and whatnot. I believe they start preseason right at the beginning of February, like other USL teams. So we haven't had anything yet, but it'll be exciting to see how that kind of adds to everything once we get that going next year.
Yeah, the reason I was asking that question is simply because I know sometimes you have some members moving up from the reserve team to the first team. And I was wondering, especially with your interactions, since you're sometimes you help your boss out, if there's any interaction in terms of, you know, some academy players that might be getting any first team time if there's any communication in terms of that.
Well, in the past, you know, especially in the summers, you know, some of the academy players have been fortunate enough to train with the first team, which is great. And it's the great thing about the club that I'm at is, you know, everybody speaks about vertical integration, but I really do see it every day where, you know, like in the summer, certain academy kids will get opportunities to train. The first team coaches come watch training quite often. They come watch the games. So there really is a very seamless connection between the different levels at the club.
Working with youth athletes, obviously there's a whole host of things. Many of them are growing through their growth spurt through a period of time when they're with the academy. And of course, they're developing values and morals as they become young adults. They're transitioning from children into their adolescency phase. So how do you as a coach try to instill values that are important to A, become a young adult, and B, become a successful athlete?
I think being in the fitness coach position, there's always a, in my opinion, it's a great opportunity to connect with the players on a pretty personal basis. You have an opportunity to be with the players, you know, on the field, but also off the field, if that's in the gym, if that's doing recovery sessions. So you sometimes gain the opportunity to connect with players about more than just the game. So you have that almost that relationship that bridges the head coach and then the player. So I think as fitness coaches, we have a great opportunity to make these players and help these players, you know, just like you said, grow as young adults. Sporting Kansas City has been fantastic in the way that since I've been there, they've already really had a way of acting and a way of thinking with our young players, that the players must, you know, be respectful. They must hold themselves accountable. The players I work with are very responsible. And, you know, it starts with the little things, like every day the players come shake your hand before every training session. And, you know, that seems like a small thing, but that act of respect goes a long way in regards to the players' daily habits. And within my position, though, obviously I sometimes am trying to get the players to do the things that sometimes they might not necessarily do or might not necessarily think are as important as the day-to-day training. If that's nutrition, or if that's, you know, the extra recovery work we want them to do, if that's the gym sessions we want them to do. And within the gym sessions, are they really putting every ounce of energy into what we're having them do? So educating them on the importance of everything, and then also holding them accountable in a positive way if they don't quite fulfill what they're supposed to do. So, you know, if somebody is not quite doing everything we ask, it's not, you know, confronting them in a berating manner. It's hey, this is why we do this. This is important. You know, these are the expectations, and the players have really bought in. You know, they've, you know, they're great about it. They want to do the extra things. They want to be in the gym. They want to do the extra recovery work because they know that it helps them. And I think that's the most important piece. I haven't really had an issue in regards to values with the players. I think the more we're with them every day and the more we talk to them, the more we're really able to impact them in a positive way. And that's also by the way we act. You know, as a coach, if I'm not practicing what I preach, then why would they really ever follow what I'm trying to tell them to do? So I think as coaches, we really need to hold ourselves accountable at the highest level also.
Could not agree with you more in terms of that. I want to talk a little bit about the LTAD model, but actually, since you mentioned nutrition and we're on the subject of values as well, parents are obviously a very important factor during this age, because most of these kids, especially if they're 13 or 14, the parents are the ones who are making them dinner or providing them with food. And also, sometimes you have to educate the parents in terms of why fitness outside of just playing soccer is important. How at Sporting KC do you have parents buy into the process? For example, do you have meetings with them? How does it work?
I think the big starting point for me is making sure, obviously, the players have only so much control. Obviously, these players are going to go home at night and they're going to eat what their parents obviously cook for them or whatever's on the table. So I think a big piece for us is really educating the players. educating the players in regards to, you know, looking at nutrition more as fueling your body instead of just eating. You know, what's going to help me perform better? What's going to help me recover better? If I have these choices, which is the best choice? And through a lot of educational means, if that's me sending articles or me sitting down with specific players about how they're eating, if that's me asking the player to just fill out a food log over the course of a week, so we can really look at what they're eating in depth and say, hey, this is good. Maybe we can adjust this. Maybe we can change this, because these are kids. And we all remember when we are, you know, age 12 to 18, I can tell you, I ate things then that I could never eat now, just because of the way my body can handle it. So, you know, kids, I also don't want to be at the point where these kids are so regimented in their nutrition that, you know, they're that kid who's out with his friends and they're going to go to a pizza parlor, and just because they're in the academy, they're sitting there watching their friends eat pizza because, oh, coach said that's not good for me. I can't have that. I won't be a good player. I think I'd rather have a situation where, you know what, we talk about the 80-20 rule. Eat 80% of the time what your body needs, what it needs to perform, what it needs to recover. You know what, 20% of the time you can have this, you can have that. You know, it doesn't have to be crazy strict nutrition all the time. You are a kid. You can enjoy your younger years, because when we get older, we got to be a little bit more selective. So trying to be realistic in that aspect also, that these kids are going to have certain things. I think it's the most important piece is making sure they understand, hey, I got a game coming up. You know, in this buildup, I need to eat the right things. Or, you know what, I've been tired at training. Why am I tired at training? Well, let's look at your diet. Well, that's probably why you're not quite feeling properly. Are you getting your post-workout nutrition in? And, you know, the kids that we have are great about making, we're fortunate where the kids can make protein shakes or a protein smoothie after every training session if they want. And I write on their whiteboard in their locker room every day, make your shakes. That way, you know, even if they forget, they'll see that leaving, so they can go in and make a nice little shake or smoothie. That way they're getting that nutrition in straight away after training. You know, and the club does a great job of making it available to us to have post-game nutrition on the sideline. That way when a player comes off, we can get some source of protein and carbohydrate into their system straight away also. So we control the stuff at training, and we help them as much at training. But away from training, it's more or less about empowering the player by education and teaching them, you know, what is the right thing at the right time. And then hopefully in that way, you know, we've had players give us examples where their parents will make something for them and the player will actually say something and say, hey, no, coach says I should probably have this the day before a game at home. Mom and dad, can we change what we're eating? I've heard a couple players say that. So I think the education is working. We do presentations at the start of the year. We sit down and talk about it. So the players do a good job, but obviously they're kids, so you still got to watch them and you got to stay on them all the time and constantly help them and educate them. But they're very open to it. The kids that really want to get better, or that want to really perform the best they can, they're dying for this information and they want it all the time.
And it's really great to hear that you've been able to impact the kids that way, and also taking that a little bit more of a moderate approach to it, or your 80-20 approach, rather than being a strict disciplinarian about it. Because as you said, when I was 12 to 18, I would also eat things that I probably wouldn't eat right now.
No, exactly. It's just, we got to let them, these kids are already making a sacrifice. They're training every day. They're gone on weekends. They're missing their high school football games and basketball games. I think we got to let them be kids a little bit at the same time.
When it comes to long-term athletic development, or LTAD, there's a couple different models out there. And I was wondering, what model have you been using at Sporting KC? It might be something that you built in-house. And what are the different stages within it?
The big thing for us is, you know, and there's a lot of really good people out there right now talking about this stuff. It's becoming more and more popular. And just, you know, I've even listened to some of your podcasts and heard some people talk about this. The big thing for us is we want to install the foundation at the young age, you know, our 12s, 13s, 14s. We want at those ages, we want to make these kids good movers. We want them to move well. We want them to be able to change direction properly, move linear properly. But we also want to incorporate different types of movement training, not just your simple speed and agility type stuff. We also want to throw in some simple things, some simple tumbling things, some simple gymnastic type things. And I'm not going to say I'm a gymnastics expert by any means, but there's some very simple things that we do in regards to tumbling, teaching them how to fall, getting up, you know, core bracing type of things that we incorporate each week with our younger kids, especially because these kids, you know, everybody's talking about early specialization. These kids are not playing other sports. They're coming to soccer practice every day of the week, and it's all year round. And I think there's a lot of benefit from kids playing other sports, especially at younger ages. So we also try to incorporate alternative type games within our training sessions, especially at the younger ages. You know, can we throw a handball game in there? You know, I've even seen our U14 coach on a light day play flag football with our U14s. You know, can we get the rope from inside the gym and do a little tug of war, stuff like that, just to, you know, develop different types of movement skills, but within real games. And then, you know, can we rotate through the different types of movement training to ensure that when our players get older, they're moving well, their chance of injury goes down, you know, their movement efficiency is at a point where we can really start building on top of that in regards to strength, speed, power, you know. And we've really focused on that this season, especially with our 12s and 13s. And then our 14s are kind of getting a little bit of they're in like a transition phase, because we talk about maturing and developing and peak height velocity. Well, our U14s have some boys who are, you know, through the peak, their peak height velocity period. We have some boys who haven't even come close to hitting it yet. So we need to be very careful with those guys that we're not training them all the same way, because obviously there's chance of injuries in there, and there's also just chances of overtraining. So we got to make sure that, you know, we pay attention to the measurements, because we have measured every single player in the academy to see when their peak height velocity period is, so we can train them in different ways, you know, grouping them through, you know, I think we're going to talk about a little bit later, by putting them in different buckets so we can address different areas for them to improve.
I was going to say, let's talk about it now in terms of bucketing players, since we're on it.
You know, the great thing, our younger, you know, with our older boys especially, I like to take into account their peak high velocity, because obviously you want to see, you know, what they're physically ready for. You know, are we able to start throwing a little bit of, you know, mass on them? Are they at the point where they need to, you know, progress in their strength and power training? Or are they at a point where they just need to learn to move on the field and also in the gym? So through looking at their training age, I like to look at first and foremost, how many years has this kid been doing the type of training we're doing? And we have some boys that have been doing it for 2 or 3 years, because, you know, before me, there was a fitness coach that was here also that did a great job. So we got some boys who've been doing the gym work and on the on-field work for a couple years. Well, if I have somebody who's been doing it for 2 years and they're past their peak height velocity, that's going to be a kid that needs to be trained in a completely different way that still hasn't matured yet and has never been in a gym in his life. So I need to train these two different players different ways within the gym, but then also within some of the field stuff. So we've taken to an approach where we're splitting players up for their strength work, if that's for their corrective work before training, and also within their just overall, you know, energy system development type training. Some players are ready to be pushed a certain way, some players aren't. So we've taken an approach to, I guess, bucket them, put these players in the buckets, and then, all right, because the main reason why we do that is, especially before I had somebody help me out, it's me with five teams. Well, that can be very difficult to individualize every single training program, and then not just you have to spend the hours planning the sessions, but then also being able to watch every session and make sure every single individual program is being done properly. So instead of approaching it like that, we've decided, you know what, we're going to approach this in a way where we group the players, we put them in their buckets, and that way players that have specific needs or specific issues, we can train together in certain ways. So it becomes a little bit more simple, but then also efficient in our time, because we got to be realistic about it also. You know, everybody says they want to individualize, but that is very difficult just in the current model. So it's been very beneficial because, you know, we do our corrective work. They know what group they're in. Their sheets or their assigned program is out where we want it to be, and they go through their little program. If that's working on mobility, if that's working on stability, or if that's a group just working on some maintenance, trying to maintain what they have because they're in a good spot. Within the strength stuff, we're going to have guys that, and for me, every player that comes in and has never trained a day in their life, I don't care how mature they are or how physically fit they look or strong they look, they're all starting at the base. They're all starting at a point where I need to see if they can move properly. I need to see if they can lunge. I need to see if they can squat. I need to see if they can, do any type of, I guess, body weight movement exercise that we would assign. Once they've shown me they can do that, then yeah, we can progress them and do different things. So there's guys that start there. There's guys that, you know what, they're at that point in their maturation where their body's dying to throw on a little bit of size through some hypertrophy training. And we'll definitely put guys in that group. And then there's guys that, you know what, let's start progressing this into really strength and power type exercises because they're ready for it. So it's been good this year. You know, the boys, they almost want to move from one group to the next. So that's always kind of nice to see.
Two follow-up questions. First, at what point do you start using fitness tests? Is it a specific age group?
This season we did it with our U14s, U16s, and 18s. With the 14s, we just did a version of the yo-yo test. And I'm always very, I guess, cautious with testing, especially with kids. Because like we just talked about, you know, on our U14s, there's kids who, you know, they're physically, you know, biologically still a 12-year-old. So, yeah, obviously they're not going to do very well. And I don't want to, within that test, go, oof, this kid's struggling. Well, no, he'll be okay. He's just got some growing to do and some maturing to do. So we do it more or less as just a barometer to see where the kid's at currently. And I don't think we ever use it and hold it against them in any way. That way, when we do it later on, all right, we see the progression, we see them moving forward. With our older kids, yeah, we do want to look at, you know, aerobic capacity and see where they're at physically at the preseason. Obviously, we're going to do it again here in December before we go on our little break. And then we'll do it again as they come back, and then we'll do it again at the end of the season, mainly as a way of seeing where they've progressed or, you know, have they regressed in regards because to fatigue? Are they just exhausted, you know, physically? So that way we can look at it as a way of saying, all right, how we train these guys, was it good because they improved, or did we overdo it a bit? And by the end of the season, these boys are so tired that they can't even do what they did at the start of the year. So with our older kids, we do a couple other tests. We like to look and see, you know, where they're at power and strength wise with a counter movement, non-counter movement jump. And then we also do a short 10, 20, 30 meter sprint test just to see where they're at. You know, just kind of build their physical profile. Again, these tests aren't any way a means of saying, oh my gosh, these kids aren't fit type of thing, because the way we look at it, the way we build up and progress through the season, we know that we're going to get these kids in the physical shape that we want them to be in just through progressive training and scheduling and organizing of sessions and just through our periodization model, I guess you'd say.
The second follow-up question that I had is, what type of movement screens or assessments do you do and with what age groups?
Right now, just again, through sheer time and just, I guess, where we're at within the situation right now, where you almost use for the younger guys, you know, and the 12s, 13s especially, you know, they're at a point where we can really see where they might struggle just by watching them warm up, by watching them do some of the exercises in the warm up. Can they skip? Can they shuffle? Are they able to, you know, do a simple lunge forward? So we don't necessarily do a screen with those younger guys. mainly because the time that would take to do it with every single one of them would just be outrageous. You know, there's around 80 kids in the academy, and that'd be very difficult to do. So we really take a focus on, let's watch these kids in the warm-ups. Who's struggling with their movement? Who's struggling to just do the simple things? And let's see if we can fix some things just through our daily training. With the older guys, they're 16s and 18s. We do take them through just some simple movements. We don't do a full-on FMS or anything like that, but we do take them through a few different movements in regards to how they move in the different planes. Are they able, you know, what their body's doing in a squat and a lunge and, you know, simple things like that. And then we can look at some flexibility things also. So that's how we assign our correctives based on that. If we find a player is really having some issues with some things, our athletic trainers do a great job, and our athletic trainers take them through another set of screening. And after they take them through that screening, they're then assigned additional exercises that they need to complete throughout the week. So, you know, if we find players with more issues or competencies or whatever you want to call it, we do go through a whole nother like layer of screening. And so you'll see some guys doing some extra work that I'm not even assigning, just because our training staff has done such a fantastic job of assigning them some additional work.
For the U16s and U18s, obviously, I'm sure you're still using different buckets with them for gym-based strength and conditioning, but how often are they doing strength training? And at some points, are they doing it on their own outside of the academy?
You know, in our perfect world, we'd have them in, you know, in the perfect world, you'd have them in the gym 3 days a week. But I think we all know that the perfect world situation is hard to come by, and it doesn't really exist. So in my overall looking at it is, can we just keep some consistency? I hate if a week goes by and we weren't in the gym at all, because then they're going to be in the gym next week and we're going to have soreness, and that's not what we want, because soreness means, you know, they're not able to train, you know, as well as they should the next day. So if we can keep some consistency, I love keeping them in twice a week. You know, if that's focusing on some kind of more total body type thing earlier in the week, and then maybe more of a core upper body thing later in the week, that's great. And, you know, if the schedule gets crazy busy and we're traveling, if I can just get them in once a week just to keep that consistency, then fantastic. Because the way the season is, it is very similar to the top level. You know, you have these players who come in and you only have them in the evening. It's not like we can bring them in the morning and do some gym work in our current situation. So we have short windows to work with, but I think we've done a good job of keeping some consistency. And in all honesty, I have to tell players they can't work out more than players saying, I can't, it's not, they don't want to work out. Players, they love being in the gyms. These kids get pretty excited about seeing the results, getting a little bit bigger, getting a little bit stronger. They can see it in the mirror, all that type of stuff. So the kids want to do a lot. And, you know, if the great thing about our situation is, like we've talked about, every player is different. And some of these kids are in their high school weightlifting programs. And just because it's a class, and if they don't do it, they're not going to get a good grade. We got to work with that. And I'll have players come up to me and say, hey, we did gym stuff today at school. I'm really sore. I'm tired. And I'm like, no worries. You don't have to do what we're doing. But hopefully we can educate them that when they're in their high schools, they're doing the type of exercises we want them to do. So that's a battle you're always going to fight with kids that are going to high school, but that's just kind of part of it. And you just got to deal with it. Just coming back to the question you asked, the most important thing is consistency. Can we at least get in the gym once a week, but better twice a week? And if the schedule allows for it, let's hit three times a week. Three times is very difficult just because of the schedule, but, you know, twice a week is doable if you plan properly and you do the right things on certain days. You know, we have a game on Saturday. We can do some stuff on Thursday. It was just leave certain areas of your body alone type of thing. And the players understand that I'm never going to hurt their ability to perform at training or games because they're going to be sore. If I do that, then the players are going to be much more reluctant to come do gym sessions. That's for sure.
At the Sporting KC Academy, how do you go about assessing training load for the players, making sure that you're getting enough stimulus, but you're not overstimulating them? And also, what is the communication process like with the technical staff in terms of their technical and tactical sessions to make sure that, for example, they're not having a really high intensity day shortly after a game or anything like that?
Yeah. First and foremost, I'm very fortunate that the relationship I have with the coaching staff is great. They're so open to talk about things, connect on the phone, connect via email. You know, this is where I'm seeing things, and, you know, training tonight, let's talk about it. Let's see what you've got planned, and let's see if we can adjust it or add to it in some instances. I think the important thing to say is I'm never going to tell a coach what they should do in training in regards to what drills they should do or what exercises they do, because a coach wants to coach in the way they want to coach, and they got an idea of it, and it's not my job to tell them how to coach the team. I think my job is more coming alongside them and saying, hey, this is where the players are at physically. Tonight, can we adjust the training session in regards to rest periods, or can we open up the space and add more players, more defenders? Can we make it more extensive so there's not as much cutting and jumping and tackling, because that's going to have more of a wear and tear on their bodies and we're close to the game? And they've been great about it. We've kind of got a program already in place right now where each morning we're currently using a Fit for 90, which is a program which looks at player readiness, player wellness, and then RPE. And every morning I send a message out to the players, just reminding them, because they're kids and they got a million things going on with school. Hey, fill out your readiness bright and early. That way we can see where they're at. And that just asks them a series of questions about their how they slept, the number of hours they slept, their mood, their stress. Are they sore? And if they're sore, where are they sore at? And then after they fill that out, I get a report back through the program showing me where every player's at. You know, are there any red flags? If there are red flags, I can look into it. Are they a red flag because they slept poorly, or are they a red flag because they're sore? Or are they a red flag because they're stressed out? And if they're stressed out, I got to reach out to that player and say, hey, what's going on? And we can talk about it. And maybe it's something as simple as, you know, the old my girlfriend dumped me type of thing. Or it might be something as simple as, you know, I'm just stressed out because I got a test this week type of thing. And we can connect on that. And we might adjust an individual's training session based off of it, just based on what they say to us. Obviously, that's not going to be the all, be all end all. We're going to look at that information, and then we're also going to look through a few other filters in regards to what the training session was like. And they enter a session RPE. They tell us, in their opinion, on a scale of 1 to 10, how difficult it was. And then we get a very simple load number based on the RPE and the duration of the training. And if it's a, you know, they gave it an 8 and it was 60 minutes long, you know, do the math. That gives us a load number to tell us, you know, this was the player's load for that training session. And it's always interesting to see that different players on the team, one are rated a 9, one are rated a 5, one are rated a 6. And then we got to look at the actual session and go, why did that player think it was so difficult? You know, was he playing in a position that asked more than this guy? And do we need to adjust tomorrow's training session because of it for him? So we've been very fortunate using that the last year. It's been really good because it allows us to connect with those players and really see how they're feeling. We have used it, though, in a way to go, wow, we thought training yesterday was really difficult, but the players didn't think it was tough at all. So maybe we need to adjust today because we might need to add a little bit more to get the adaptation we want. So that's been fortunate. We aren't using any type of monitoring system right now in regards to heart rate or GPS or stuff like that, because in all honesty, when it's just me, and I think if you're going to collect data, you better be doing something with it. And I don't think we want to collect mountains of data and spend all this money on all these GPS systems and whatnot for the situation we're at and not ever really use the data like we should. You know, as we grow and as we, you know, build the academy, you know, and people come in that, you know, join the staff, then there's people that want to look at that type of stuff, then great, because in a perfect world, you're able to take their, you know, their personal, you know, thoughts on how they're feeling. You want to take the subjective and you want to take the objective with, you know, monitoring systems, and then you want to marry them all together and really look at it. But right now we found it to be very beneficial that we're just focusing on, you know, the player readiness, player wellness questions, the session RP stuff. That's been very beneficial for us planning our training sessions.
Yeah, it would be kind of pointless to be collecting the mountains of data if you're not going to have the time to analyze it and make changes to it. So that obviously makes sense. And plus GPS and heart rate monitors are expensive.
Yeah, and we want to make sure if we're using something, we're using it well and we're using it the best we can. And it's one thing to collect all the data in the world, and it's really good. Don't get me wrong, you know, if we were in the situation where we could collect the data and really analyze it and really look at it and really dig into it, it can only help us. And I think we'll get there at some point, but at this current spot, what we're doing right now has been really beneficial, and we're seeing that in the players' performances, and we're also seeing that in the lack of injuries, which has been very positive.
I like to always end my podcast giving some useful advice to young coaches that are just starting off their career. I know you come from a background where you mentioned that you initially were doing some personal training and also coaching soccer, not necessarily from a fitness side. How did you make that transition? What advice would you have for someone that is currently in a similar situation if their goal is to eventually work in soccer, whether it's at the college level or NASL or USL or MLS?
I think the biggest piece of advice I could give is, you know, I wish I remembered who said it. I just heard it, you know, in the last few weeks. Is somebody was talking about, if you want to really move forward and get that good job and get that dream job or work in professional or whatever it is, whatever your goal is, you know, stop focusing on the future so much and just be really, really good where you're at. And everything else will take care of itself. If you're in a position and you are working extremely hard and you're paying attention to the details and you're just doing everything you can do in your current position, you know, that helps so much in moving forward. And in addition to that, don't be afraid to do something for free. You know, if that's within the college piece, I started as a volunteer coach. I just came every night and helped out and picked up cones and did what I needed to do. And then I did an internship, you know, and that's unpaid. You know, you go out there, you work, put a ton of hours in, but the experience is incredibly beneficial. So, you know, be good where you're at, work hard, you know, pay attention to the details, but then also, you know, reach out to people, try to go watch people do things, shoot people emails that are doing really well in the profession. You know, over the last 10 years, I couldn't even tell you how many emails I probably sent out to different fitness coaches or, you know, sports scientists. And, you know, 90% of the time you don't get a response, which is part of it. But that 10% you do get a response back, those guys are the really good ones. And those guys are the ones that are trying to help you because they've probably been in the same situation. So, you know, reach out to people, work hard where you're at. Don't be afraid to do something for free, even if you're in a city and there's a local college and you just reach out to that college and say, hey, can I come watch your strength and conditioning coach? Can I spend time with him in the gym, you know, this week? Can I spend an hour or two? Can I ask him questions? You know, and you might have to travel a bit to do it, but building those relationships and trying to learn from everybody you can is really, really important. And I guess it would go without saying, you know, in the last year especially, if you use Twitter to your advantage, it has so many good people that are sharing so much good information. You know, I use it more or less as a means of, I'm going to favorite this and I'm going to read it later type of thing. So I just scroll through, favorite about 10 things. And then I go through and I read all the things I've favorited, because top people in this profession, really people that are a lot smarter than me, are writing articles. They're putting out information about what they do. And you can learn a lot from it. And then also podcasts. You know, there's people doing great podcasts like yourself that this is free education. This is like going to a 1-hour seminar to listen to someone speak, but it's free. That's, in my opinion, that's amazing. When I kind of stumbled upon podcasts, I was like, oh, I wish I'd been doing this for the last 10 years, listening to these things while I drive, because you just learn so much.
No, absolutely. It's part of the reason that I decided to make this podcast was because I found podcasts to be really invaluable. And I just noticed that there weren't a ton of information in terms of soccer strength and conditioning here in the States when it came to podcasts. And so I wanted to create one where I just wasn't focusing on the US, but also bringing in some ideas from Europe. And for any of the listeners out there who are just starting off their career, you know, please feel free to contact any of the people that are on my podcast. Just last week, Joshua Neff, who's with the Chicago Red Stars and was on here earlier, told me that a university student contacted him, and now they're getting coffee together and talking. So, I mean, everyone that comes on this podcast is more than available and very willing to help you out. And with that, what is the best way that someone can contact you, Josh, if they have any questions or comments?
No, that's great. And that's why we do these things, to help each other out and pay it forward. The best way to contact me, you can obviously find me on Twitter. It's Josh McAllister 7, pretty easy to find. But then also, you know, just shoot me an email. It's J McAllister, just like my name, @sportingkc.com. And yeah, any question, I'm happy to answer. And, you know, then I can set up, you know, obviously you can email, you can set up a Skype conversation, or just like you said, like Josh up in Chicago, if you're in the area, I'd love to sit down and chat with anybody. So more than available to connect and talk.
Josh, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I'll make sure to put down your email and all that information on my website when I publish the podcast. So I really appreciate you coming on the show, and thanks so much.
Thanks, James. Keep up the good work.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in today. If you enjoyed the podcast, make sure to leave a review and rating on iTunes. It really helps others discover the show. If you enjoy the show, make sure to follow me on Twitter @historicperform, and I'll see you guys next time.